For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Read On, the audiobook show from RNIB Talking Books. I'm your host, Robert Kirkwood, and well, we haven't done a show like this in a couple of years. We're looking forward to Book Week Scotland.
A set of well-worn steps lead up from the lane to the garden. It isn't far from where we live, but it's a world apart.
All seeking forgiveness for sins from nights prior, imagined or otherwise.
It wasn't until I was back on a plane, looking down as we took off, that I realised how Scotland had healed me.
Pals or no pals, I was a one-woman, yipping-chipping nightmare.
And we're planning, or rather hoping, to get up to a wee bit of nonsense tonight.
It's bright yellow wellies splashing in muddy puddles and red sledges against white snow.
As we grow, we form other attachments. Little strings of connection between us and people, music, moments.
A collection of short stories celebrating Scotland stories this Book Week Scotland. Today on Read On. Book Week Scotland this year runs from the 14th to the 20th of November. And as with most years, comes with a free book. Stories around a certain theme, written by established authors and amateurs alike. This year, Scotland's stories. Ever since the publication of the first Book Week Scotland book, My Favourite Place, audio versions have been produced by RNIB. For the first few books, the stories were read by volunteers and by staff, but a few years back I floated the idea of having the authors read their own stories, putting aside a recording day in the RNIB Scotland studios for people to come in to read for us. A certain virus paid to that, but it didn't stop the authors reading their own stories in the comfort of their own homes, using whatever technology they had to hand. So coming up on today's show is a selection of those home-recorded short stories. These ones were selected completely at random and from all over the book, just to give you a taste of the complete book. If you want a free copy and you're in Scotland, they're available from many bookshops and libraries across the land. But you can download an e-copy or the audiobook for free now. Just head to scottishbooktrust.com and search for Scotland Stories. So sit back and relax to 9 stories from the Scotland Stories book for Book Week Scotland. I said they were chosen at random. This first one wasn't, because the author and narrator was on Read On around 2 weeks ago. She was here to tell us about her book, The Last Girl to Die. Her first short story is written and read by author Helen Fields.
Let the Shadows Fall, written and read by Helen Fields. California, we were living the dream. Sunset walks on the beach, lazy weekends by the grill, chatting with neighbours, sunshine on tap. My husband, children and I had left our extended family behind in England and flown off to live in the USA. And then disaster struck. The details don't matter, but my reaction to it does. For the first time in my life, I was dealing with stress that was just too much for me. Emotions that were too raw to face. A crisis that threatened to unravel me completely. In the midst of it all, I had a trip planned to Scotland. That wasn't unusual. My books are set in Scotland. It's a country I love and know well. And whilst living in the US, I was doing a fairly regular international commute for events and book tours. On that one occasion, however, it felt like the last thing I needed. I set off from Los Angeles heavy-hearted, feeling sick to my stomach. The flight seemed to last forever, transferring at Heathrow and finally landing in Edinburgh. I went straight to a hotel and took to bed. 12 hours of sleep and one hot shower later, I dragged my sorry self to the car hire company and picked up my ride for the next week. So jet-lagged that I stuck a post-it note on the dashboard proclaiming in large red letters, "Drive on left." Then I got on the road and headed north. My purpose was to hit a few bookshops, sign some books, catch up with a few people I knew along the way, but mostly to check out locations for my next two books. I'd packed badly for the transition between the burning heat of Southern California and the less tropical climes of Scotland, by which I mean I'd neglected to even pack a coat, and my warmest item was an old hoodie. And so I began to drive, heating blasting, the sat-nav doing an unimpressive job, wearing my sadness like the scarf I should actually have packed. I stopped first in Kinross, where I bought takeaway coffee and a bacon roll, then found a car park overlooking Loch Leven. I cried there for an hour, watching shades of grey dance on the water's glassy surface, listening to the silence. Other cars came and went, dog walkers passed me and raised a greeting hand. A bird, hoping for scraps, watched me from a post. We shared the bacon roll, little by little, as I sat on the bonnet of the car and let the wind dry the tears from my face. I breathed Scotland's air. I looked across the water to the island where the ruins of Loch Leven Castle sat, and I tried to recall the tidbits I knew of its history. I was fairly certain that Robert the Bruce had visited there once, more sure that Mary, Queen of Scots, had stayed there as a guest, later imprisoned and forced to abdicate. I lost time, fingers curled around my slowly cooling coffee, imagining the comings and goings across Loch Leven. The endless sun-up, sun-down of that churning, bloody history. By the time my imagination was exhausted, even the bird had given up waiting for more food. I began driving again, this time heading for Braemar. The sun shone a little that afternoon as I went, not enough to heat the air, but sufficient to put shadows at the sides of trees and at the edge of the growing hills. It wasn't the Californian sun, and I was grateful for that. It didn't suck the oxygen from your lungs and threaten burns from too long an exposure. It was a herd of deer that stopped me in my tracks, made me pull over to watch them run, leap, eat along the foothills of the glorious Cairngorms. I stood at the side of the road, not another car in sight, and I basked in it. The Cairngorm region has a light I found nowhere else on earth, always tinted slightly blue come winter or summer. It's a clean light, a true light. In that moment, I was reminded of a Walt Whitman quote. "Keep your face turned always towards the sun, and the shadows will fall behind you." Metaphor or not, I did just that. I turned into the sunshine, closed my eyes, and I let myself be thankful for those seconds. For the vastness of the place I was in, for the nature surrounding me, and I drove once more. In Braemar that night, I didn't hide in my room. I found a pub serving food. I sat at the bar, and I talked to the woman serving the drinks. We talked about nothing much, as only the Scots can. We laughed for no particular reason, which is what the Scots are good at. And when I was done, the woman who'd kept me company put her hand on mine, looked me in the eyes, and said, "You're all right, sweetheart. Everything's going to be all right." I don't think I told her that I was troubled. I certainly didn't impart any of the details of the crisis we were in at home. She just knew and was able to reach out with flesh and bone and touch my hand. And it didn't solve anything or change anything, but it was everything to me. I didn't cry again for the rest of that journey. I wasn't happy, I don't think, but the weight was gone. As I drove and visited and took in the scenery that can only be Scotland, something changed. It wasn't until I was back on a plane, looking down as we took off, that I realised how Scotland had healed me. It's all about scale, the sense of being one tiny part of a much bigger thing. When you stand by a loch, or on a mountainside, or in the Highlands,
or a beach in Scotland, there is peace. There is peace because nature has been preserved there, protected, loved. Nature is at the top of the agenda, which means you, as a visitor, can find your proper place within it. But the scale of Scotland is about history too. It's about realising that the world will keep turning. You can fight your battles, win or lose. You can choose sides and go screaming into the fight. But a next day will come, and the night after that, and all the things you fought for or railed against will change once more. Scotland had always been, I understand now, my temple. That visit simply gave me pause to think about why. It's where I go to plug myself in, to recharge in all the ways that matter. Scotland is my therapy, my food and drink. I returned home better able to face the world and able to help others heal. All it took was to stop and breathe a while and to remember how temporary everything is.
Egg and Chips, written and read by Sarah Houston. I don't remember how I met them. I don't remember where. The how and the where are as irrelevant now as they were then. The room is crowded and cosy, bright, too bright, with long plastic strip lights gracing the high white ceiling. Bob Holness's voice is booming out of the big box of a television, which is sandwiched between the doorway and the fireplace. Each week, Bob's contestants look hopeful and confident. Blockbusters is as much of a ritual of this tea time as the egg and chips, which I know will soon be ready. Evie, short, stout, white-grey, coothie, sits in her easy chair beside the watery pictured television set. We chat comfortably through the game show, about the questions on the telly and school drama. Bella, a slightly taller, darker version of her sister, joins the conversation from the kitchen, just behind the sofa, where she stands pinny on, spatula in hand, in front of sizzling pans on the gleaming white Belling electric cooker. Bella and Evie, sisters, companions, housemates, my elderly neighbours from across the road and up the narrow lane. Every Wednesday after school, my little brother and I head out, down the gloomy flights of stairs from our ugly, modern, top-floor masonette, across the road and up the narrow lane to the pretty old granite fishermen's cottages. Unlike the rest of the cottages, theirs is set side on to the lane, with a quaint paved garden to the front, studded with rose bushes and climbers. A set of well-worn steps lead up from the lane to the garden. It isn't far from where we live, but it's a world apart. The sisters are waiting for us, with a smile and a cup of tea. 6 sugars, please, says my little brother. The plates arrive. Bella places them on our knees and sits down beside us with hers. Sometimes we eat at the small dining table in the back corner of the room. Just enough space for 4. But not today. We eat, watching Bob, trying to answer the questions he asks his contestants, laughing when we get them wrong, mopping up yolk with our chips and sipping sweet, milky tea. 2 elderly sisters. Alone. Together. In the moment of childhood, it doesn't even cross my mind to ask if they were married, if they have children, grandchildren, any family to call their own. Each week we follow the egg and chips ritual, without question, without hesitation, without asking, my brother and I know we are welcome. We moved to this small northeast fishing town, our new home, just a few years earlier. It feels like a lifetime ago. My brother and I, and our mum. We knew no one. Our reason for being there irrelevant now. Our friends and family are hundreds of miles away, somewhere warmer, more familiar. We make some friends, but are always incomers. The language is a challenge. Fit like, loons, quines, dukers. It takes a while, but we soon have one way to speak at home, another at school. Playground Survival 101. Many years later, so many things have changed. The place that was strange is now our home. One thing that remains is the warmth in my heart for two lovely ladies and a plate of egg and chips.
Because I Matter, by Angel Rogers. Like a rat up a drainpipe, I shot out that school gate like the devil was on my tail. This wasn't my gig, and I wasn't unpacking. If I was going to engage in education anywhere, it wasn't here. I totally had the fear, and the battle lines between me and my ma were drawn. Day in, day out, I was frog-marched through the gate. Opposing the forces at play, I shot right back at it. Get back here! Gangly Gibson with the protruding teeth stomped a path towards me. It's no happening. We'll see. Come at me, tin opener teeth, you absolute howler. Gibson snatched my arm. In the tussle, she somersaulted backside over elbow and splattered spread-eagled in the concourse like an upturned turtle. 13 years and a prolific school refuser, I was a gob on legs with a tongue that had enough spark to light a match. Filterless, my thoughts tripped out my mouth, focused and fearless. I thought they were justified. If there was ever a holy grail of rebellion, then I wrote the book. Defiance, not compliance, that was my motto. There was nae tame in this free spirit. Why? Because I matter. School or I'll get the jail. My ma was at her wit's end. All right, Greta Garbo, curb your melodramatics. At war with society, I rolled with my posse, much to her disapproval. I wasn't caring, they were my pals. I was accepted and ready to roll with whatever. Pals or nae pals, I was a one-woman, yipping-chipping nightmare. Regarded the family disappointment, I acknowledged I was an organic pain in society's rectum, but debated I was a product of the soil she'd fertilised me in. The day the police chapped, her mania skyrocketed. Get your carcass to school, PC Bobbin roared on his unannounced visit. Your ma's demented wi' you. Blanking him, I gaped out the window and scanned the expansive Jubilee Crescent. What's she doing? He squinted. Looking for who asked you? Shift yourself, lady. That'll be no, you absolute fraggle. Faking bravado, I darted away and locked myself in the lavvy as Bobbin pounded the hallway in hot pursuit. You cheeky wee, gone yourself, you mutant, I called from my hideout. Remove your boggin' breath from my ma's keyhole with immediacy. It reeks like a hog's butt. Shots fired, the stench of fear rose as Bobbin and my ma battered the door dementedly. Sorry, officer, my ma squirmed. I'm affronted with her. And there she blows in 3, 2, 1, gone yourself, ma. Your jackets are a shugly peg. She went from a steady simmer to near explosion in 4.8 a millisecond, hammering the door like a woman possessed. Hold yourself together. I cranked it up a gear, the door bolt ensured my safety. You're embarrassing yourself in front of the constabulary. A stilled silence ensued as the standoff continued. She's disturbed, my ma sighed. Aye, pot, kettle, hen. Well, your brother's no like that. Aye, I'm totally killing the whole family disappointment thing. The rebellion held out as Bobbin admitted defeat when his radio crackled and his gaffer ordered him elsewhere. Nonetheless, Rebel was trending and like an infection, I took hold. Exiting my hideout, I prepared for the onslaught. In an ugly incident, if looks could have killed, I was a goner. Know the height of nonsense, but famed for her signature daggers, my ma drew her eyes off me, the look penetrating my soul. You're grounded. And that'll no be happening, I winked. Get in. No, tally ho, ma. You're a pure riot, my posse chuckled as I relayed Rebel events. I was a complex kid, but so was my fear. Life had torn cracks in my ma, cause of her poor choices, and she wasn't getting away with tearing any more cracks in mine. A victim of circumstance, my rebellion rose with frustration from her midnight flit to Edinburgh and been catapulted without warning into a life I didn't fit into. My broad Glaswegian accent made me the subject of ridicule. So did the clothing grant, shoes and jacket, indicating I was a welfare wane. That made me the subject of playground humiliation. They were boughing, they compromised my dignity, and I wasn't wearing them. With the dreaded chap for Peacock, the education welfare officer, trouble brewed. An imposing character, he terrorised Waynes. Know this Wayne, though. The standoff continued until he put me before the children's hearing. Sat in silence, the glare of the opposition was slicing. "Awkward," I blurted out, amid disbelieving gasps. "Show some respect," the bigwig peered over his spectacles. "Bolt you, you fossil." Fit to explode my moth-feigned patience. She had to. There were too many witnesses. "You poor woman," the bigwig sniffed. "Hold on, how's she the victim? You haven't asked my side of the story." "Just go to school." "Aye, so and I will." Losing the battle, a compulsory supervision order was imposed, and I was appointed a fangly-dangly social worker. Let me tell you, this was never going to work. Something in my soul cried, and I rose in resistance. "Ram your social work at your bampot!" I didn't fit into the new world, and they weren't going to make me. Life never gave me lemons. It turned me upside down and smacked my backside, leaving scars nobody noticed. Social worker or no, I never returned to school. It's changed days, though. Although the hardliner rebel still bubbles within, I turned failure into success and made peace with my demons. A practicing social worker, I support Waynes like I was. The difference, these Waynes have a voice. Looking back, my ma had her misgivings, but so did I. Throughout the battles, her patience was commendable. What she didn't see was that I had inherited her fighting spirit. All misrepresented rebels, salute yourselves. Live fast, rebel hard, regret nout, and stand up for what you believe in, even if you're standing alone. Why? Because you matter.
Yellow Craig, written and read by Kirsty Niven. Polystyrene hail flings down while the sun beats and beats, nonsensically Scottish and oddly beautiful, perfectly framed by the square of the caravan's tin window. A Morse code soundtrack taps itself out on the roof as I scribble in my notebook. Pins and needles in my feet, trapped under the snoring clumber, but at least they're warm. The pencil grinds down to a nub, pages overflowing in a gush with thoughts and plots. Inspiration and imagination unlocked by the safety and peace of a home away from home. The kettle clicks on, their naps are over, just as the end is etched in block capitals.
If you have a question about living with sight loss, no matter how big or small, the RNIB helpline is here to offer support, whether it's connecting to your Wi-Fi or connecting to your community. From remote banking to TV remotes. Call us on 0303 123 9999 or say, "Alexa, call RNIB helpline" for more information. RNIB, see differently.
You're listening to Read On, the audiobook show from RNIB Talking Books. Today, a selection of stories from Book Week Scotland's free book called Scotland Stories. And if you're listening to this before the 14th of November and are in the Glasgow area, there's an event at the GFT, the Glasgow Film Theatre, at 7pm on the 14th of November, hosted by Sally Magnuson. It's free, but you have to book a spot through Eventbrite. So go to Eventbrite, Eventbrite, .co.uk, and search for Scotland Stories. But for now, here's another tale from Scotland Stories.
On a sense of space, on a sense of place, read by Raman Mandair, on a rainy afternoon in Glasgow in 2022. When we are born, our sense of self is tied to the bodies that surround us. The folks we consider parents or parental figures, we feel a visceral connection to them. They feel so strongly a part of us that we cannot imagine our place in the world without them. As we grow, we form other attachments, little strings of connection between us and people, music, moments, little strings that form webs, webs that structure and hold suspended our senses of self. Later, we anchor ourselves to lovers, friends, and experiences. As we get older, a sense of emotional geography emerges, a personal cartography of all the actual physical places that embody our experience. The house we were raised in. The tree we climbed. The tree we fell out of. The house where we realized we no longer belonged. The default orientation to this is that these experiences and moments happen to us, at us, that we have no autonomy over the creation of our own emotional geography, that the sense of home and place in our personal cartographies are born out of a fateful reckoning. But what if we could be proactive and fashion our own sense of home and place? If we could carry this inside us, our own personal estate that we protect and nurture and that couldn't be taken from us. When I was a child, I used to dream of secret gardens. Night after night, I would imagine that I had lucked upon an opening in my parents' prosaic garden, a wormhole that I stepped through, Alice-like, into another world, a world similar to mine but much, much better. My secret garden was less about a potential physical space, but more about a space opening up inside of me. A place where I felt more myself, away from the tyrannies of childhood and the daunting prospect of young adulthood, where I was safe and free to dream. In this garden, I was a concentrated self, a pure essence of my spirit. In the garden, I was me. I've lived in Shetland for many years and experienced the wild landscape as if it were a dear, challenging friend that facilitated growth. In fact, I felt married to the landscape and more connected to it in a way that I didn't with the island's people. I found many private spaces and places that felt like home, including a friend's semi-cultivated garden, Lee Gardens. This special place has at times felt to me a secret escape. An unbelievable lush imagining in a landscape which can sometimes feel unwelcoming. Lee Gardens is a horticultural triumph and a delight to the eye in every season. It's a place where one can be more of oneself, concentrated and mindful in the here and now. What is a garden if not a place of endless possibility? What is a garden if not a sanctuary, a place that restores, renews, and reveals new ways of being? Lee Gardens is an extraordinary place, a poetic testimony of how one can create one's own environment in horticultural grammar and metaphor, a creative intervention in the Shetland landscape that sings and speaks to us of how we can embed ourselves peacefully, respectfully and playfully into the landscape, how we can endeavour to dialogue with nature in a way where we draw out the accent rather than clip its joyful cadence and its contributions in the natural open song of the north. Here, the garden's textures, layers, stillness and activity all offer space to ponder beauty, the seasons, the cycles of life, and a place for self-restoration, a sacred space to suit yourself, reflect, and to look inwards and feel home rather than looking outwards, looking and yearning for home. You are home. You are here. And in this moment, the Shetland's curlew's song is mine. The heather, moss and undulating hills and skies are mine. I'm not particularly religious, but I do feel a spirit connection with nature, to the curlew and the bonksy, the sparrow and the wren. The sea and sky are reflections of my ever-changing mind and mood. Trees offer sacred sanctuary. Flora and fauna delight the heart and eye. All feed and uplift my spirit. I am a nature girl, despite the fact that I lived in cities for most of my childhood. I'm truly at home when in natural and rural spaces. I was born in India, but raised in the UK. When I returned to India for the first time in my early 20s, I was struck by how viscerally I connected with rural India. India is so diverse. There are many, many aspects to India, each so different. For me, returning to the place where I was born, Punjab, and visiting the land of my ancestors, the Pind, rural Punjab, was a revelation. Everything made sense. How I felt so home with nature in all its forms. I understood that at the heart of me was a country girl, that although I loved the city and city life on many levels, cities were like mistresses who drew me away from my true love, my true self, my real life. I have felt nurtured by both cities and the country, but in one space I felt I had head and heart space, and in the other I often felt unable to discern my own wants and thoughts from others. Cities were inspiring, entertaining and exciting, but were for me a place of bamboozlement. They provided a diversion from myself. Interestingly, what I miss most about cities are people and the best of what humanity can make: art, music, food and community. I don't have that human connection in remote rural island life, but what I do have is heart and headspace and a pure conduit to nature. In the natural world, in wildness, I feel my true size and I imagine I have a more accurate perspective on life. Recent years spent split between Shetland and Glasgow's south side have proved fruitful. Last year, I was proud to be part of the community that actively stopped a UK Immigration and Border Protections Agency taking one of our neighbours. That May Day on Kenmure Street in Glasgow will never leave me and has been banked as one of the spaces or places in my heart that will never be displaced. I feel emotionally tethered to the truly gallus and green locale of Pollock Shields in a way that I never thought any city could seduce me. Scotland's Shields and Shetland's Islands have shaped, nurtured and uplifted my current neuropathways in these days of flux. And I am forever grateful for this.
Sunday, Black and White, written in red by Des McAnulty. Dedicated to the loving memory of Gerry O'Donnell and Fiona Gallagher. I'm back. McCool's. I used to come here Sunday, when I felt all yingy and yangy and yucky, after a night in the subby, or the arches, or the art school. I was with those of ilk, a communal lapse of Catholicism, all seeking forgiveness for sins from nights prior, imagined or otherwise. If only we knew how much 1 hour from our week in the chapel would soothe our wee mammy's hearts. But it's here we seek penance. Black, 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 and then white. We glugged that drink back with our eyes closed. And when they open, forgiveness. Rationale. No need for penance. The music is soulful and whole. You can see in your mind the dancing that once accompanied these old songs. In a dance hall down the road. Love was found here. Most sparked brightly, then soured. Some blossomed and flew. Children run the Glasgow streets, born from love that began over cold pints in these corners. Mates and colleagues, lunchtime to kicking out time. Brothers and sisters, diary dates met. Fathers, first pints with sons. Sons, last pint with fathers. In here, it all happened in here, and now I'm back. Back here with my son. He wants my phone and cares little for the emotional pull this place has on me. He'll come here with his own friends one day. At least, I hope he does. I stay for a while longer, an older man than I ever thought I'd be. The black and the white falls with the same glorious ease. I wish it was a long gone Sunday, but those times aren't coming back. As I leave, I notice two old ace faces keeping the place sharp. If they remain, so too will the memories. Whatever the game, whatever the song, as the dance goes on down the old years. I hope I'm always welcome here.
The Seeds of Our Home. written and read by Diana Montaigne Toombs. Scotland was not my first home, not even my second. Like all good love stories, mine was not without its hardships and obstacles to overcome. Moving to Scotland with a small infant in tow and knowing no one at all was always going to be challenging. Despite the beauty and buzz of the city, after many months of living here, it still felt unfamiliar. I was, and perhaps still am, a stranger in a strange land. But slowly, it won me over. Gently, over time, it revealed its secrets and offered me a little space in which to plant my flag and start to grow roots of my own. My Scotland is not a single place. It is a quilt of experiences and memories that have woven themselves into the fabric of my being and added yet another layer to my already eclectic sense of identity. It is days spent in ancient castles and cathedrals, playing with my son, exploring the past and inventing stories and tales of what may have happened there. It is fun and playtime, running through dark passages and spiral staircases, and playing knights atop castle walls. My Scotland is the excitement of sitting in the car and beginning a new adventure to an unknown place, of embarking on a journey which will ignite the flames of our imaginations, gifting us a feast for our eyes and souls. It is moments playing on sandy beaches, squealing as we talk ourselves into entering the cool waters of the sea, and shrieking as we make racetracks in the sand. My Scotland is laughter as we run across woodlands and embrace the child within. It is pausing to explore the tiny details we might usually overlook and wonder aloud together at what creatures may live there and make the earth their home. It is collecting shells and stones to treasure as keepsakes of our travels and feature as protagonists in the retellings of our adventures. It is seeds planted with little hope of any chance of growth, only to find, a few months later, our windowsills flourishing with colourful flowers and plants that threaten to reach the ceiling. My Scotland is filled with colour. Beautiful sunsets of purple and pink on short winter days. Red, orange and yellow skies as the sun sets perfectly over a watery horizon. Its bright yellow wellies splashing in muddy puddles and red sledges against white snow. It's filled with yellow gorse on green hillsides and purple heather on autumn days. It is grey stones on a trodden brown path and pink blossom blowing across the window in the spring breeze. My Scotland is aquamarine and deep blue sea against a bone-white sandy beach. It is landscapes whose grandeur continues to take my breath away. Mountains that rise from the ground like giants, watchers, thousands of years old. Sights that I had only ever seen in pictures, only to discover that the pictures failed to convey their true magnitude and impact. My Scotland is wild camping and cuddling together as a family in a cramped tent as the wind and rain batter us. It is Glencoe and forgotten raincoats and campfires. It is ice creams and barbecues beside locks. It is filled with family walks and attempts to find waterfalls as a small child asks to be carried. It is the renaming of places to Fantasy Hill and Tidyland. But more than all that, it is potential and invitation. Here is the place where we had to begin anew, where we were forced to carve out our own small space and form new habits and traditions, where we challenged ourselves to confront difficult times and discovered hidden strength and perseverance. Here is where we took chances. The place where we leapt into the unknown and blindly trusted that we would find a solid landing ground. And we did. The place where dreams were followed and realised, where patience was tested, and hypotheticals turned into realities. Here is where we planted new seeds of hope and watched them ever so slowly begin to grow. My Scotland took time to take shape and form. It did not come easily and was sometimes filled with friction and downright opposition. Sometimes it felt impossible. But it was patient and let us discover its gifts slowly, in our own time. It welcomed us and with each new experience rewarded us with an appetite for more. It filled us with a thirst to explore further, to be braver and more ambitious, to make memories that we can treasure long into the future. My Scotland is not something tangible, but an essence. It is wonderment and hope and inspiration. It is daring to dream. It is the space to pause and appreciate the possibilities before me, and finding the courage to seize them when they come. It is trusting in my inner resources and resolve. It is what has turned a foreign land into a home. Scotland was not my first home, but it is the one which has captured my heart.
Blue Car, written and read by C. E. Eyre. I remember my mum telling us this one time. We were all there in the living room. I can still picture the scene. My dad's where he always is, in his chair beside the fireplace. My older brother's still at the table. The bairn's sitting on the flare beside my dad, reading a comic. He's 9, my wee brother, but we still call him the bairn, because he's 6 years younger than me. A great wee guy, dead funny, but spoilt rotten. I'm edging towards the door, trying to escape before my mum decides she needs help with the dishes. I'm already a bit late to meet my pal Froggy, and we're planning, or rather hoping, to get up to a wee bit nonsense tonight. Maybe chat at some lasses and that, it being Friday. Froggy is actually daft enough for anything, so he is. He's a bit mental, but with a heart of gold. Gee his last penny, so he would. He's called Froggy because he's already over 6 feet tall, with huge hands and feet, but skinny as a rake. My dad says he has the muscle definition of a plate of spaghetti. And he really isn't the smartest, I have to admit. Limpy Provin, our English teacher, gives him a hard time for being thick as mince. I mind us one time when Froggy had given him a specially dumb reply to a question. All Limpy just stared at him for a bit, then comes out with this really nasty line. "Does your mother actually feed you, Muir?" he asks. "Or does she just water you twice a week?" I had a hard time explaining that to him later without hurting his feelings. To be honest, if his brains were dynamite, he couldn't blow his nose. Anyway, back in my story, my mum speaks. "Mrs. Patterson at number 11's man's got a new car," she says. I should explain something. None of the men neighbours had names, as far as my mum was concerned. And the women all had a number attached. Not that it was necessary. They all had different names in every street. Oh, except for the Wilsons. And they weren't really in our street. They were on the corners of the big road. My mum called them Mrs. Wilson on the corner and Mrs. Wilson on the other corner. So their men were called Mrs. Wilson on the corners man and Mrs. Wilson on the other corners man. These rules didn't apply to our neighbours. She was Flossie next door, and he was Harry Kirby. Just the one word. Go figure, eh? Elaine, who was 5 years older than me, and a total dreamboat, pure fantasy material, was Flossie next door's wee lassie. And Johnny, who was just my age, was Flossie next door's boy. That simple. Not only that, but all unmarried women were wee lassies to my mum. I don't know why. Even that Agnes Mackay up the road, number 17. And there's nothing wee about Agnes Mackay, I can assure yous. I mean, well, yous know what I mean, I'm sure. Okay, back to the story. Mrs. Patterson at number 11's man's got a new car, my mum says. Now, my dad's reading the paper, of course, like always, and no really paying much attention. He reads it from the back to the front, like every man in Scotland, maybe even the world, I don't know, because that's where the football is. My mum pauses. She's great at pausing, my mum. She knows just how long to pause for. She watches my dad, sees him start to notice that she's paused, and he's thinking, oh, what to say, because he's not really sure what she was blethering on about. Then she carries on. It's blue, she says. Dark blue. Oh, aye, says my dad, which is what he says maybe 99% of the time. Dark blue, she says again. What do you make of that? She's using her posh voice, speaking correctly, to show that we're as good as Mrs. Patterson at number 11, and her man, even if we haven't got a new car, dark blue or otherwise. What kind is it? My brother asks, barely looking up for his motorbike magazine. I have just told you. My mother is getting more posh by the minute. It is dark blue. Navy, perhaps. No, says my brother. What? He stops abruptly, as my dad does something that makes the paper snap. Oh, aye, says my dad, with a slightly different inflection this time. He's nearly as good with inflections as my mum is with pauses. He has about 57 variations of oh aye that he uses to suit any situation that might arise. And a wee movement that might be interpreted as a nod of the head sometimes. Like now. My mum purses her lips and her chin goes down and back up. She is satisfied with the family reaction to her news. She looks at me, gives a wee nod o'er ain towards the dishes. I sigh, but only inside. I wouldn't be bad to my mum, even if she is going to make me late. After all, Froggy will wait. I nod back. She pulls the right side of her cardigan across her chest, then the left side, picks up some plates and marches through to the kitchen. I heap the cups and saucers into a pile, and a follower.
R&IB Library has all the latest reading titles in a format that suits your needs. You choose the books, you choose the format, we deliver to your door. Follow us on Twitter at R&IB Library or find us on Facebook.
Just one more tale to go on this Read On Book Week Scotland special. These stories were chosen at random, but I was very surprised to find that this last story is set where I live.
Inspired by Ladybirds, written and read by Linda Brown. A neighbour handed two second-hand books into my gran's house. They'll keep the wain entertained when she comes to visit Mary. Gran, an established member of the hand-me-down generation, accepted them with thanks, adding them to my reading pile on her bookshelf. The books, both published around 1961, The Ladybird Book of Trees, and What to Look For in Spring, a Ladybird Nature Book, fascinated me from the moment I flicked through their well-thumbed pages and was hooked by the bright illustrations and engaging text. I yearned to be able to identify trees, know when to listen for willow warblers and where to look for blackthorn blossom. Of course, even at 8 years old, I realised the book's content and tone were aimed at a famous five kind of child, a 1950s girl from Doon South, who enjoyed spiffing adventures, drank lashings of ginger beer, and ate something mysterious called radishes with her salad. Not a wee 1970s lassie, Fionnair Shirley's tune, who kicked about the swing park, drank red cola, and ate chips with her salad. Some of the idyllic landscapes portrayed on the pages, marshlands, downs, and canal banks, would not be discovered on my doorstep. Lombardy poplars were hardly flourishing in my local woods. Reed warblers and sandpipers were unlikely to be nesting along the nearby river. Or were they? Undeterred by these minor concerns, I took the books home, rounded up four pals, and organised an expedition for Saturday. The plan was to explore our Irvine Valley backyard, searching for the trees, plants and wildlife described and illustrated inside the Ladybird books. So, on a fine spring morning, our own little Famous Five gang, Lynn, Kathy, Anne, Beth and me, set out with my books shoved in a duffel bag, along with a handful of Highland Penny Caramels for sustenance. Our first foray into the wilds took us to the woods on the bank of the River Irvine, just a stone's skim from the village centre. Eyes alert for signs of wildlife, we meandered through the trees, studying bark and leaves, comparing them with the drawings in the books. Someone had brought a small magnifying glass to help. Soon we were identifying beech and sycamore trees, spotting blue tits and chaffinches flitting among the branches, inhaling the oniony scent of wild garlic, and spying grey wagtails bobbing about stones at the river's edge. We followed the path to New Milne's Dam. On previous walks there with my parents, when the river had been in spate, I'd caught glimpses of sleek, silver skin and thrashing tails in the frothy waters as salmon struggled to loup the dam, battling to reach their spawning grounds upstream. But that day, the river was low and calm. All we saw in the shallows beyond the dam were darting shadows of brown trout. Over that spring and summer, us five explorers rambled around the countryside surrounding our town. We hunted for wildflowers, finding red campion and marsh marigolds clustered on boggy ground where, to great hilarity, Beth lost a shoe and gained a muddy sock. We were stung by nettles, searched for soothing doken leaves. Shins and calves stained green, we stripped off socks and shoes and paddled in the chilly crystal waters of a burn, pebbles jaggy beneath our toes, tiny fish tickling our ankles. We roamed Big Wood, renowned in late spring as a bluebell paradise and nicknamed locally as Bluebell Planting. Thousands of the iconic flowers were spread like a violet cloak across the woodland floor. An abundance of bluebells can indicate ancient woodland dating back centuries, and certainly bluebell planting has a strong connection to Ayrshire's past. Deep among the trees, alongside a burn, and being reclaimed by nature, are the ruined remains of the 12th century Moreton Bailey of Arklowden Castle, reputedly the home of Lady Margaret Crawford, mother of William Wallace. Folklore suggests bluebell woods are enchanted. Bluebells are said to ring to summon fairies. But we never heard any bells or saw any fairies. We only heard beautiful birdsong and saw squirrels scampering up oak trees to hide in foliage and the white scuts of rabbits disappearing among the flowers. 50 years on, and I still walk these riverbank and woodland paths. Not much has changed. Some trees have gone and the dam has long since been demolished, but the bluebells blossom at Big Wood. Still a magnificent blue-purple haze stretching as far as the eye can see. Nowadays I take my camera with me on my rambles, snapping shots of snowdrops and thistles, herons and hares, flowering hawthorn and ripe brambles. Only last week I was overjoyed to capture my first image of a kingfisher, vivid amber and teal, regally perched on a low branch overhanging the earthen, a fish clamped in his beak. Without doubt, those old ladybird books sparked my curiosity, inspiring a lifelong love of nature, and I've happy memories of our innocent childhood treks of the 1970s, when we experienced a taste of freedom and independence our own children, a few decades later, would not be allowed. And what happened to my ladybirds? Well, I still have them. My own kids enjoyed them too. Today, their dust covers have disintegrated and their yellowed pages exude a slight musty odour, but they are tucked away, top shelf, on my hall bookcase, patiently waiting to be handed down to my future grandchildren.
Not often that New Mills gets a mention. Now, if you want your free copy of Scotland Stories, just head to Book Week Scotland and search for Scotland Stories to download the ebook or the audiobook now. And remember to head to Eventbrite and search for Scotland Stories if you're listening to this before November the 14th to attend that event hosted by Sally Magnuson. I'll be back at the same time next week. You can find me on Twitter at talking_books. And until next week, remember to read on.